Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice they'd give to other veterans seeking to do the same. My guest today for episode number 145 is Andrew Neuwirth.
It didn't occur to me to consider a career in financial services until I actually updated my LinkedIn profile after receiving orders to resign my commission from the military. And I was contacted by a good friend of mine who happened to also work at Goldman. And he said, hey, there's this great program. You need to learn about it. You have to apply. I said, oh, yeah, sure. I'll put it on the to-do list. And he said, no, you need to do it today. The application closes in 18 hours. And that was the jumping off point into really learning as much as I possibly could about what it was to be a Goldman Sachs employee and what the firm does and can do.
Well, when I look back on the last 140 interviews I've done with military veterans, there's a couple strengths that stand out for a lot of veterans. The first is integrity, always doing the right thing in every situation. And the second is a strong ability to forge strong and lasting relationships, working with diverse teams, meeting people, and being in incredibly difficult situations and getting along with them. And my guest today, Andrew, found a career path that seems to blend both of these strengths and utilize them. He works at Goldman Sachs, and he works as a private wealth advisor. And if you're interested at all in financial services or curious in learning about the landscape in this role in particular, this is a fantastic interview for you. One of the reasons I really enjoyed my conversation with Andrew is he never sought out to pursue this career. He wasn't even really aware of it until he started to transition from active duty. He's got a pretty incredible tale of how he found his way here. But after talking with him, it seems like it's a career path that would be well suited for many people on active duty. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find links to everything we discuss. You'll find events and other great things for helping active duty members and recently transitioned veterans succeed in their civilian career. If you haven't had a moment to leave us a positive review on iTunes, I'd greatly appreciate it. It helps us get the word out about the show. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Andrew Neuwirth. Joining me today in San Francisco, California, is Andrew Neuwirth. Andrew, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hi, Justin. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, for listeners, I wanted to give a quick background on Andrew. He is a private wealth advisor at Goldman Sachs. He started out at the Naval Academy, after which he served as a submarine officer for 7 years. After his military service, he transitioned directly to Goldman Sachs, which I am extremely impressed at. I'm very much looking forward to hearing his story because it's a very coveted position. You know, coming from a business school background, Goldman Sachs is one of those highly sought after firms to join, and to see someone managing to do that directly from the military is really astounding. And so, Andrew, maybe to start things off, when you were on active duty, how did you approach that decision to leave the military?
Yeah, that's a great question. And thank you for saying all that stuff at the beginning. I certainly feel lucky to have this position and very fortunate that there are folks who came before me that did it and helped guide me as I was getting ready to do it. But so approaching the transition, you know, I knew that when I was at the Naval Academy, I wasn't sure if I was going to do 5 years, which is, you may know, the required amount of service time, where I was going to do 20 plus years of a long, lengthy naval career. But I knew that I wanted to do what I thought was going to be the most challenging thing for me, which in this case was the nuclear engineering program and the submarine officer program. I had the opportunity to do that after 5 years serving on a boat. I had the opportunity to consider, okay, do I want to get out or do I want to do some more things? I felt like I was ready to make one big move, one more set of orders, take another duty station, really explore a different aspect of the Navy. So I went to work for an admiral on a staff as a submarine liaison officer to several foreign countries. A truly different situation than what I was doing previously as a line officer on board the submarine. And during that time, it became readily apparent to me that the things that I loved the most about the military life weren't compatible with the things that I thought were most important to me living my life, which is not necessarily moving around every 3 to 4 years, you know, really trying to build something and build a family in a place that I would call home. And as a result of that, I started the transition process. And actually, you know, I didn't enter it knowing I wanted to be in the financial services industry. I didn't enter it thinking that this was even a possibility. Frankly, you know, as an engineering officer, the natural step is to actually move into some form of operations management, engineering management. And that's where I was going full bore. That's what a lot of my friends had done coming directly from the service. And it was a story that made sense given our unique set of backgrounds. You know, I'll stop there, and I can get into how Goldman then entered the picture.
Curious about that. Like, how did? Because I'm just putting myself back. I was submarines as well, and I went to business school at Stanford. I had no exposure to what careers were out there besides the ones you described. It was like government contracting, nuclear power plant, things like that. Were just the example I saw. That's one of the big motivations for doing this show. And I'm just kind of curious, how did you even gain exposure to that as a possible career path?
Sure. Because I majored in economics at the Naval Academy, the financial services industry wasn't necessarily a total mystery to me. Certainly the inner workings were, but, you know, I was familiar with the way things worked in the world of finance and economics to a very sort of 101 level. And it didn't occur to me to consider a career in financial services until I actually updated my LinkedIn profile, after receiving orders to resign my commission from the military. And I was contacted by a good friend of mine who happened to also work at Goldman. And he said, "Hey, there's this great program. You need to learn about it. You have to apply." I said, "Oh yeah, sure. I'll put it on the to-do list." And he said, "No, you need to do it today. The application closes in 18 hours. And that was the jumping off point into really learning as much as I possibly could about what it was to be a Goldman Sachs employee and what the firm does and can do.
That's the universe looking out for you. It's just like drop it in your lap, and rather than having it be something that just never gets done, it's like you have to get this done right away, which is crazy because I imagine most people spend, I would imagine they take a while to think about that application process, and then to just have 18 hours to just do that. I imagine that's like a drop everything and figure out a way to get this to work.
And that was it. I mean, it really was, right? If I'm sure many of us in the military would believe this, you know, if it wasn't for the last minute, nothing would get done. something like that.
What was that application process like? So in like that 18 hours, and hopefully listeners who are thinking of applying have more than 18 hours, did you need to do to get that application ready?
So really, the application for this wasn't terrible. The initial phase wasn't terribly cumbersome. Because I had already started the transition process, I had what I thought was a good resume, something that had been iterated on from my friends in the military to friends not in the military, which I can't stress more than enough, is having people that don't speak military looking at your resume. And I thought I had, you know, enough of me on that one page that I could feel confident submitting it, and then start the secondary outreach effort, which is finding people in the roles that I was applying for at Goldman, reaching out cold, saying, "Hey, this is my story. I want to learn as much as I can. This is why." And then the third important thing that happened within those 18 hours was a light bulb moment. Okay, wait, do I actually want to apply? Because I'm not going to apply if I think I don't want the role, because if I do end up getting it, you know, fingers crossed, I don't want to take a role if somebody else really, really wanted it and I wasn't sure. You know, I think we probably have a lot of friends at the Naval Academy who came and felt that way, or folks we know from back home that didn't come because they didn't feel like they were really 100% committed to it. So the the thing that occurred to me, in fact, the story that I told in the interview and the story that I tell now, and it's true, is that when I was heading into my senior year at the Naval Academy, and you'll remember this, we're given our first class loan, which is the option to take a certain amount of money from the bank at a really reasonable interest rate to really do whatever you want. So they called it the Career Starter Loan. And I knew at that point that I was going to join the submarine force. And I knew in submarines, there's no internet underwater, I guess it sounds glib, but if I wanted to take this money and invest it, I had to think about the right way to do so and just not be able to touch it for 3 to 4 months at a time. And I really enjoyed that process of doing it for myself and thinking about the opportunity costs of one decision versus another. It made sense to me that was so enjoyable. That was something I should look to do as a career.
It's funny though, because it seems like that wasn't something top of mind when you were on active duty and doing that transition. It kind of, that was like the light bulb that came off, like you said, as you were applying this. But I think it's great for listeners to hear, if I'm understanding that correctly, that it's not like you need to, on active duty, have a clear vision of what you're going to do afterwards. And sometimes the things that we've done in the past, that we have that clicking moment where we're like, oh yeah, I actually enjoyed this thing 5 years ago. I haven't thought about it, but that's something that I might want to do in the civilian sector.
I completely agree. Having a direct path is perhaps the most efficient, but perhaps not the way to find the best answer. I think the best advice I got, and the advice that I would hope to share with your listeners, is be open and willing to take advice and learn from people's experiences through the process as much as possible, and just be a sponge for information. Because, like me, and I imagine, like you during your time at business school, somebody's going to say something that's going to click and light a spark, and you're going to realize, oh, that is actually something that we should consider, or I should consider looking at.
That's great. So take us through, what is the Veteran Integration Program? I know that guests on the show in the past have mentioned it. I don't believe I've had someone who's gone through that program. Tell us more about that.
The first one. All right. So a lot of weight on my shoulders. So the Veterans Integration Program is a program that Goldman Sachs started, I think, 6 years ago. I think I was the fifth class to go through, and it was so. At its most basic level, it is an 8 to 10 week long internship recently transitioned members of the armed forces to find a role or to learn more about the financial services once they have expressed interest and applied. But that's the most basic. The requirements are they publish them. They're just what they are. And any other opportunities to learn and intern in different roles. So whether that's in my role within the investment management division, within the investment banking division, or within operations technology, things of that nature. I think about it now, having gone through it and helping with recruiting here in San Francisco, both with the Veterans Integration Program and with MBA students, is that it is effectively an MBA internship that's a little bit off cycle. So it's not in the summer. It's at least when I did it, it was a month before the MBAs got here, and we had full run of the place. We had access to all the same programs, all the same requirements that the MBA students did. And I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to, one, learn that it was something I really wanted to do. And then, there was a seat open for me, and interviewed, the eight week long interview, if you will, and ended up being successful there. So, I don't know. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, totally. So we'll get into your role in private wealth advisor. But once you got into the Veteran Integration Program, what was the landscape like? What was kind of some of the career options that you were thinking about, or the options that you could have applied to from that?
Sure. So what in that initial application phase, You select up to three different types of roles within the different business lines of the firm. So that could have been, like I mentioned, within investment banking or within the investment management division. And I actually only selected the advisory role within the investment management division. I was quite confident that if I was going to go into financial services, that was the role that I was really going to do. But I do have colleagues who interviewed for a number of roles, whether it was with the investment bank or the operations team, and eventually decided to join the operations team, for example, based on that interview process and an education process.
Could you give like a description for someone who might not be familiar? Like what's kind of like the one or two line description of the career path or kind of what the like an investment banking or someone in operations, like what does that translate to?
Translate to, can you meaning, like what do they do here?
Yeah, yep.
Nice. That is actually a harder question than you might think. So an investment banking associate joins a team. This is, I mean, and this is as best as I can describe it because it's not something that I not
Yep.
something that that I do, but so they join a team focused on a specific sector or a subsector, and that team then helps with all of the things that the investment bank does, whether that's capital raises, underwriting, underwriting issuances, things of that nature, sort of the very classic investment banking role. I've mentioned operations and technology a few times. So what those roles entail are working in the middle or back office of the firm, and they are the true guts of the firm. Without those operations, or without those people running the operations, this place would absolutely collapse. They're based all around the world, and they handle things for, as varied as ensuring that our internet, is secure, that our trading systems are operating appropriately, and that when we book trades or when we make trades on an exchange, that all the pieces match up and touch where they're supposed to, and that the securities get allocated to the right people. It's an immensely important thing that hopefully, if it's done right, the client never actually realizes it's going on, right? They just know that they talked to us and then good stuff happened.
So what I'm projecting on this is, 8 weeks, it sounds like it's an incredible time to get to know people, get to know the culture, get a feel for what you want to do and have them evaluate you. I'm picturing that just like at the Naval Academy, you had, summers to go on a submarine and surface warfare ship and kind of get a feel for which one was the right match for you. Similarly, you were getting a feel for this, and after those 8 weeks, there's something that clicks, and you're like, private wealth advisory is the route I want to go. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's, I actually had considered that. See, that's why it's nice. That's why you do this. That's a great point. And just like, for those of your listeners who didn't have that experience, one of the main tenets of that summer experience as a midshipman on the different training missions or platforms are that every single sailor, officer, marine, whomever that you or I interacted with, they are committed to educating and giving you an honest opinion and providing honest feedback about what they do in the military, what their life is like inside and out, so that you can really make a well-informed choice. And to your point, Justin, that is exactly what happened here. Folks from the most senior to the most junior in terms of tenure here, in terms of responsibility, made themselves available more than I would really have expected, frankly, and provided that education for me. So that was, yeah, that's a great point. That is exactly what it's like.
That's great. And I imagine that results in people picking the right route for them and ultimately happier employees and better fits. Do you have a sense for, in your cohort, how many of the people that went through the veteran integration program ended up gaining employment full time at Goldman Sachs?
You know, I can't answer the number totally. So let me first say, so within the investment management division, I think that there were six of us who did the internship, and everyone save one, so five out of the six, I'm pretty sure started full time, and the sixth decided to head to business school. So, you know, didn't take an offer that was there. Had he wanted it. And then with the other folks, I think most people were successful, actually.
That's great. Well,
yeah, I'm sorry I don't have a more concrete.
I was just trying to get a sense of whether this is like, if it's still, if it's like so much of a long shot, or if it's, you know, if it's kind of like a, how difficult of a proving ground it was. What would you share with listeners about the interview process then, or any advice on how to prepare for this sort of interview?
The interview, and we call it a super day here, as you know, I'm sure a lot of other firms do too. It is a long day, let me tell you what. So you have probably six separate interviews. You know, in the case of the Veterans Integration Program, it might be more, because maybe you're interviewing for different roles, you know, be it the investment management division or technology or something like that. So the possibility for that is more. And it's hard because you know what you did in the military, and you know why it is important and what you've learned. But you have probably 25 minutes to distill that experience and communicate it in an impactful way that makes sense for Goldman Sachs, or, you know, really whatever company you're interviewing for. Because I think the assumption is you have to assume that the person sitting across the table, they know what it is to be, you know, a submarine officer, an F-18 pilot, or a senior chief quartermaster or something like that. But they don't actually know what that means, and they shouldn't. So it's our job to teach them. So that's hard. That's the hard thing. The first hard thing that you as the interviewer have to do for yourself. The second thing is you really have to study what it is you're interviewing for as best you can, and then be able to talk about something interesting that interests, or something that interests you that relates to that. So in my case, you know, what did I do to prepare? So one, talked to as many people at Goldman in this role that I could, you know, respecting their time as much as possible, of course, trying to stay as up to date as possible on the world in finance, both geopolitically, with the markets, really just everything that was happening. I think at the time I was interviewing, you know, the price of oil was moving around a lot, and there was a lot going on with trade in China, and that was interesting to me from an economics perspective, but also it was a way for me to discuss and prove to the folks interviewing me that I actually was interested, was teachable, you know, and someone that they wanted to give a shot. Hopefully that answers the question.
That's great. That's great. And then, you know, I wanted to talk about your current role. And so on LinkedIn, you say that you are a private wealth advisor, and it says you serve as a trusted advisor for ultra high net worth individuals and families, corporate executives, entrepreneurs, and select institutions, including foundations and endowments. How would you describe it to someone on active duty who's maybe a couple years out from their transition? What do you do?
Sure. So if I could to take your question and answer it as if I were talking to another submarine officer, because those are, you know, those are the folks who tend to reach out to me the most.
Yeah.
You know, what is so interesting about this role is that trusted advisor piece. So really being the first call when a big decision gets made. It is actually something that every single, certainly officer on board a submarine, and likely the folks that we're working with and for the officers also experience. You know, I can't tell you how many times the captain or the engineering officer or somebody called me, because I was a guy on watch, you know, driving the ship or running the nuclear reactor plant, and asked, "Hey, we want to do this. Can it work? What do you think?" And you run through your decision making process through whatever means that is, and then you do it, right? How many times have I said, I think we really need to turn the ship left, and we talked about it, and the ship turned left. So it's not to be cavalier, but the infrastructure that supports us as advisors here is such that we are free to engage with the best thinkers, the best strategists, the most experienced people, so that we really can provide that control of risk for our clients. These are the most important families, business leaders in the world, who truly do rely on us to protect and mitigate that risk that is inevitable or that is inherent in investing. And that's.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh no! I think yep. That's how I would probably start to describe what it is we do.
I love that analogy, and from an outsider's perspective, the reason I think that analogy works, it seems like when you're on a submarine or a ship or whatever you're in, when you get that question from the captain, you're talking to navigation, you're talking to sonar, you're talking to weapons, right? Like, you're talking to all of these different parts who have, each of the parts have more information than you do, but you're getting all this information and then going back to the captain and putting together a cohesive plan. My very limited understanding of your role is that, when you are working with these ultra high net worth individuals, you are going and you're learning from experts within Goldman Sachs. Are going all over to get the best information based on what they're looking to invest in or what their long-term strategy is. So it seems like a very comparable role of working with experts and coming together with a cohesive plan. Is that fair?
That is completely fair. That is much more eloquent than I could have said, so I appreciate that. what else is it to build on that briefly? What else is, I think, extremely unique to this firm is that, so when I speak with a client and we want to talk about some specific strategy, whether it's related to fixed income or something very complicated and esoteric, we as advisors know quite a bit, certainly, but we're absolutely not going to be the end-all, be-all experts. That expert is at the other end of my phone. They're either in New York or they're here in San Francisco with me. And much like being the officer of the deck on a submarine, if I really truly needed to consult with that expert and have that expert come with me to consult with the captain or the client in this analogy, they'll drop everything and do it. Mm-hmm. And that happens on the submarine. That happens here at Goldman Sachs. Many, several times a month, resources from all over the world fly into New York to go out and brief our clients and discuss how things are going and why we think they're going that way. That's what I understand about how this role exists out on the street or out on Wall Street. I think that's a very unique and special thing about Goldman.
That's great. What does that look like on a day-to-day basis? And I know a lot of listeners have written in and just talked about how much they enjoy this question and the degree to, I understand that every day is somewhat different, but the degree to which you're comfortable going into your morning routine and what time you get in the office and just kind of what your what a representative day might look like.
I don't want to scare anybody, but we're in California. The markets are on the East Coast, so we get in pretty early. We try to be here right around 6 a.m. Markets open about 6:30, and in case there's anything that we need to execute or just for the daily routine, we'll be here before then. The first part of my day, for those of us in the military, structure is important, and I think something that we all value. What was it? I think retired Admiral McCraven, who spoke at University of Texas graduation, said the first thing you should do is make your bed in the morning. Mm-hmm. That's true. I come in here and I know that, okay, I've got X number of minutes and I need to do all of these things. And the first thing that I try to do is gain an understanding of what happened overnight, the next day, and what might happen today. So that's reading the Wall Street Journal as much as possible, other news sources to gain a good understanding of the local and domestic picture. And then Goldman has a massive, massive research arm, and they put out more material than I think you could actually read in a 24-hour period. You know, but there are a couple things that I always try to highlight every single day. So whether that's our political analysts, especially this time of year, you know, right as tax reform is being discussed, they come out with notes about every 24 hours. You know, as large companies are reporting earnings, our analysts will come out with their reports, and then we'll have our more macro economists and macro strategists put out really interesting pieces as we approach 2018. So it'll be a look back and a look ahead, and that's really important because it'll structure the conversation that we'll have, you know, throughout the day and then throughout the month. And you know, me as a new advisor, so I've been here for about 2 years. I'm on a team with four total advisors, and you know, we all manage a number of clients, and we manage you know, a large, it's referred to as like a book of business. And so those individual clients have a direct relationship or a primary relationship with one of the other advisors on the team that have been here for, in my case, you know, about 10 years, and then two gentlemen have been here for about 25 and 22 years. So very senior folks who've seen a lot. So I'll help them cover those clients and whatever those folks need. And then for me, and you know, I brought up those advisors for this reason, they serve as my team as I go out and I meet people who could be clients of the firm and who want to engage with the firm and have and learn and build relationships with those folks. So it's part of my role is actually to build relationships and form, you know, form my own book of business and bring folks into the fold here at the firm. And that is, you know, that can take any sort of series of activities, whether that's going out and meeting people in person, conducting phone calls, things of that nature.
I've always viewed the role that you're in, and again, it's just a very limited understanding, but I view it as like the king or the queen of the cocktail party, where on the one hand, you're just constantly learning about the world. You're constantly taking in information. You're constantly on the cutting edge of finance, but also just kind of world events. And at the same time, so much of your time, it seems like, is spent working with clients or prospective clients, meeting with them, establishing trust, learning about their needs. And so it seems like it's a skill set that's highly, highly personal relationship driven, highly trust driven. And that's one of the reasons I was excited to connect, because it seems like that's typically areas that veterans spike, is relationships and in integrity. And it seems like you found a career path that really values both of those traits.
Yeah, that's a great point. If you were to, you know, distill and what is hopefully what I think is one of the most important long term aspects of a good advisor here, it is the ability to have integrity and to be trustworthy, and that is, to your point, something that I think most veterans and most active duty folks sort of would look at and kind of laugh, because of course, like, what, you know, what, why are you asking? Yes. What do you need? We'll do it.
Yeah.
Is often the response, and that is not something that exists, I think, in the broader population. It is a reason why Goldman has built this program into what it is, and it, you know, it's not going to be. They're not going to go out and try to hire 1,000 people. That, you know, that doesn't make sense. But the way the program exists now, to really try to find some folks who want to be here and who they want to be here, there's a basis for it. This firm has always had a good relationship with the military. A lot of folks did, you know, serve the country and came here, and you know, they're in leadership roles now. In fact, one of the great leaders of my group sits in New York is actually a submariner from the Naval Academy, of all things. You know, he gets it. There's a set of business principles that the firm subscribes to, written by one of our great partners, John Whitehead, who was in the Navy during World War II. And you know, he says, this is, I'm paraphrasing, I'm hopeful I don't do a terrible job, but he didn't write the business principles. He learned them from those that came before him, and a lot of that, I think, came from his time in the military. And they truly reflect, you know, treating clients the right way, doing what is always in the best interest of the client, having integrity, being part of a team. These are things that I think are natural, like I said at the beginning, to the veteran community and the military community.
And a lot of listeners write in, they are very curious about work-life balance. And I'm curious what you could share about working evenings or weekends or the amount of travel, just kind of what that work-life balance looks like for you.
Yeah. It's also interesting to hear that question, given that I live in Silicon Valley where there is very little.
Yep.
it's a constant topic of conversation. And work-life balance is immensely important, and the management here and everyone here is incredibly supportive of allowing us to do the things we need to do to be successful. So that being said, it's not the kind of place, and I think most private institutions or non-military or non-federal institutions, we're in the business of working for our clients and making them money and making the firm money. And that isn't a thing that can occur if there's a lackadaisical approach where you necessarily feel like you're owed time off to go work out in the middle of the day, as was built into the program in the military. Here it's a trade-off. So how I think about work-life balance is I have a certain task that I need to accomplish, which is here. And building as much as I can around that, keeping both the role here sacred and my family life sacred. And it isn't black or white. I mean, there's a blurring of the edges, and the team here is supportive. My family at home is supportive. Certainly couldn't do one without the other, which is, I think, very similar to the military. It's a constant conversation, I think, I guess this would be the way to answer that question. It's always something, always iterating on that. What does it mean to have that right balance?
It's just so funny too, because it's like no matter which industry or functional role I'm speaking with, it's just such a difficult conversation to have, because it is something that's constantly in flux. And there's also people's preference where some people don't want a 9-to-5 job, like they would go stir crazy with that, and other people do. Yeah. And so it's kind of hard to take into account all of that. But I appreciate your answer on that. What about as you look at, you've been there for 2 years now, as you think of different people and career paths they go on to after being a private wealth advisor, could you take us through kind of some of the most common paths? And I've been looking a lot at consulting. That was my background at business school. I always thought of it in terms of you work your way up to partner, you parachute into a company that you work with. Like it seemed like a couple tried and true paths. What does that look like for the field in private wealth?
Sure. I think that there are natural fits. Wait, hang on. Let me say this first. And this is how I also felt about my time on the submarine and what it meant to be what I thought was a good submarine officer.
Yeah.
I don't really have a good answer for you. I have not spent a lot of time thinking about what might come next. This is head down, do the best job you can, and what happens happens. Not to be cavalier with that answer, but certainly it's something that people talk about and that we discuss, but I don't do much time researching it. I do know that a lot of good people, for whatever reason, left their role here, and they still work in some form of financial services, whether that is a different type of investment firm, serving a different type of client, or some form of investor relations is always, that's a choice too. And then some folks, they really go 180 degrees differently, and they'll go to business school, or they'll go to some other role and learn a different skill set. So, maybe go join a tech company and learn to be an engineer in that sense.
No, I love that. I mean, when I talk with people who are still on active duty, like, and they ask about business school or other careers, and it's like, what can I do to prepare? It's like, well, the very best thing you can do is just knock your job out of the park. Like, excellence is the best translator, and so really focus on doing your best job wherever you are. And one of my favorite books that I mention a lot on the show, Cal Newport's So Good They Can't Ignore You, he just talks about this in terms of career capital, which is just really focus on the job before you, and periodically you stick your head up and you see what new opportunities are available. But if you approach each job and you just try and get as good as possible at that job and develop as many skills as possible, things always work out, and you don't have to really, you don't have to be always planning or looking for what's next. Those opportunities start to come to you when you really crush whatever it is you're doing.
Yeah, there's been a lot reported about really, I guess, our generation. We're 2 years is like the longest you'd stay in a role, and then you jump to something else. I think that probably won't resonate with most people in the military community. Not that you don't transition to different orders or you don't pick up different orders, but you're always in one arc of a career, right? So I was always going to be a submariner. I may happen to be doing a different role, but I'm always a submariner, and I'm going to go back to a submarine. It's not comfortable for me to think about, okay, I'm going to do this for 2 years, and then I'm going to jump to something else and move laterally and hope to move vertically as well. Just to echo what you're talking about. So if there are people who are considering, that's what people do now. Maybe that's the right fit for you. Probably the best thing to do is, as you said, Justin, like, just do the best that you can at whatever it is you're doing.
Yep. I also always like to ask about resources, and I'm thinking of someone who's stuck on deployment right now, or someone who's got a little bit of extra time and they're on active duty. Is there any books or podcasts or programs that have helped you in your civilian career that you would recommend to listeners?
I'm not saying that you need to buy one, but I loved having a Kindle on deployment. had 100 books in my fingertips. There's not much room on a submarine for a library. Mm. There's one book that really resonated in me, and it's called A Random Walk Down Wall Street. And it talks throughout, through all the asset classes, and it's a really interesting and, fairly prevalent way now to invest for yourself. It is very easy to read. I think fun to read, and I think it's, if you want to be involved in finance and in the market somehow, that is a good book to really get you going, because it's not macro, it's not huge. You're not thinking about, okay, what are these endowments doing? It is really, okay, I've got X number of dollars to my name. What can I do with it to grow it the safest, given my set of goals and my timeline? What can I do? And it really helps one think about it. So for folks who want to jump into finance, I think that you really can't go wrong with that book. Mm.
I will, for listeners, I'll add that in the show notes too, a link to that. And I'm just jealous because I'm thinking of Kindle was before my time on submarines, and I had just loads and loads of books, and it was took up all my space. So the thought of having a Kindle or an iPad to read that on is just extremely appealing.
It's pretty unbelievable. I sacrificed room, so my bed folded up, and I stored my clothes in there, and it's not much storage, maybe like 3 t-shirt tie, but there's a significant portion of mine that was set for oatmeal, oatmeal and protein powder, just in case.
That's awesome. One other thing I was going to ask about is, you had gone directly from active duty to Goldman, and you've talked about business school. I'm just curious, qualitatively, as you think of people you've met at Goldman, what are some paths that you've seen veterans take to get there?
So certainly business school, right? I mean, that's, I think obvious, the veterans integration integration program is one of them too. Coming in as a lateral hire, so you know, you've left the military, you've moved into an industry that is either financial services or something ancillary to it, and then you know a role opens up and you'll move laterally into the firm. Those are really, I think, the three ways that you could do this. Obviously, you know, you can always apply, and if there's a seat and you're a good candidate, they'll look at it. But those seem to be, just in my limited experience, the most secure ways to get an opportunity.
Awesome. Well, I always like to reserve the last question to be more open-ended, and that's that you've provided a lot of great advice and thoughts and sharing your story, and I'm just curious if there's anything we haven't talked about that you wanted to share with active duty and veteran listeners.
Yeah, thank you. Well, thank you for that, and I certainly appreciate your time and the opportunity to speak to you. You know, one thing that has become more important to me is maintaining a community of veterans in my new space, my new world. So whether that's here at Goldman, where they are immensely supportive of their veteran affinity group, or that's in the broader San Francisco area, where there are, you know, innumerable groups that help transitioning veterans find roles, talk about what that's like, or, you know, vets who are starting a business and, you know, want to tell you about it and, you know, see if there's a relationship to be built there. Finding and encouraging those groups to grow as you enter the civilian world, I think, is a very, very important thing to do. I didn't think it would matter that much to me. I was wrong about that. You know, over the past year, I've met some phenomenal vets out here who just, you know, we're all going through the same thing together to different extents. And to have that shared background where you can look at somebody and know that they are trustworthy, they have integrity, you can have an open and honest conversation. So find that, whatever that form is to you, find it. And then more specifically, when you reach out to talk to people, to learn more about whatever role it is you want to find, whether it's me, and I would encourage people to reach out to me. I'm always happy to do it. Any veteran, I think, will answer an email or a phone call or a LinkedIn message. It's so important to follow up. And I don't mean like send a thank you note. I mean actually like if somebody comes back and says, yes, I will, let's take 30 minutes, follow up and put that time on the calendar. Mm. Whoever you're talking to is likely really busy, as you are too, but you're the one asking for something. So really show that initiative and get that time set and follow up and make it happen. And I think that's a good way to get in the good graces of people and open doors and learn as much as you can.
Mm, that's great. That's great. Well, Andrew, I appreciate your time on this. I appreciate your sharing your story with Beyond the Uniform community. And yeah, thank you so much.
No, thanks, Justin. I really appreciate it. It was great.
Surface.
All right. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Andrew. Just a quick recap. Some of the things that stood out for me with this conversation is I loved how he talked about having non-veterans review your resume. It's a great idea. It kind of helps see blind spots or helps translate areas or helps really figure out what spots in your stories don't make sense to someone who hasn't served in the military. I think that's a great advice regardless of which career path you pursue. I also thought that his story about how his LinkedIn profile update ultimately led to this career path, and I think it just shows how powerful LinkedIn is as a tool and something that you really want to utilize in your transition. I love what he talked about with being open and willing to take advice and learn from other people's experiences as much as possible. And he talked about being a sponge for information, talking to as many people as possible. That's certainly the intention with Beyond the Uniform, is to accelerate that process for you. But I hope that you also get out on your own and start to kind of pick the minds of others, be them veterans or non-veterans, really learning from the experience of others. It's a great way to jumpstart that learning process, to learn from the mistakes and failures of others, and really get you to where you want to go faster. I liked his thoughts on investment banking, investment management, and talking about the different paths that people take to get here. So I hope you enjoyed this. If you haven't had a chance to give us a positive review on iTunes, I'd greatly appreciate it. And make sure you're on a newsletter. I'm sending out just 2 emails a month talking about the latest episodes and doing surveys and getting more information. That's the primary tool I use for the dialogue with the Beyond the Uniform community. So with that, enjoy your week. Enjoy this great start to the year of 2018, and I will be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.